I suppose as individuals that enjoy doing Bible study together, looking into a specific subject, it is rather odd to give a class on the Sabbath on Sunday, isn't it? But I think as we go through it, I hope anyway, that we'll all appreciate the role of the Sabbath in our lives and then the necessity of it. So I'll introduce with a very awkward comment, or a very awkward preposition, is that we have to keep the Sabbath. So that's even more awkward than giving a class on the Sabbath on a Sunday, right? You think, well, then, you know, you can lead the way. But I think as we consider this subject, not only in light of Christ's words in the New Testament, but we'll also consider it in the Old Testament. I think it's absolutely critical. If we want to come to any conclusion with the Sabbath, we need to look at its origins and the history of it. So we know that the Sabbath plays a strong role, not only in the first century where we have this example in Matthew chapter 12, but throughout the Jewish faith, even today. So the Sabbath is a very important day. It's a sacred day. And there's very good reasons for it. We also know that there's some Christian sects, like Seventh-day Adventist, that also do their best to keep it as legally instituted in the law. Now, I do believe, and I think after tonight's discussion, and we're going through these passages and we're looking at it, we'll all come to the conclusion that the Bible is very clear, and we are expected to keep the Sabbath. If that's the case, you have to ask, then why are we here Sunday, not Saturday? And we will answer that question. We need to know what the Sabbath is, why it was never intended to be kept only on Saturday, and what the purpose of the Sabbath was. So let's go back to the very introduction in Exodus chapter 16. And we'll get back to Matthew, because I think Matthew, Christ deals with this subject very well and provides us many of the answers that we'll get as we're going through our Old Testament passages. So the very first place the Sabbath is introduced is Exodus chapter 16. So the children of Israel, they have left Egypt. There's these great events, miraculous events, and they are in the wilderness now. They're at Mount Sinai. And God instructs Moses how they will be provided for in the wilderness, specifically through manna. And we're going to read verses 23 to verse 30. And he said unto them, "This is that which the Lord hath said, tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which ye will bake today, and seethe that ye will seethe, and that which remaineth over lay up for you to be kept until the morning." And they laid it up to the morning, as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein. And Moses said, "Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Today ye shall not find it in the field. 6 days ye shall have gathered it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none." And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. And the Lord said unto Moses, "How long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath, therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day." So the people rested on the seventh day. So that's the introduction of the Sabbath in the law. And it was in this instance where they needed to gather manna. That was the only food they had in the wilderness. It was the manna from heaven, right? And we could look at other lessons to do with manna and its relationship to Christ. And so that was the provision God provided. But he said, don't go out and work, gather that food to feed yourself on the seventh day. Instead, you gathered twice as much on the sixth, and it would last, which in of itself was a miracle. Remember, they had already had an instance when they gathered too much, and it went bad, and God was furious about that because they didn't follow his commandments. So there was this expectation that they did the work when they're supposed to do the work and not do that specific work when they weren't supposed to do that work. And what was that work that they were doing? They were gathering food to feed themselves. And there was nothing wrong in that. But there were 6 days to do that. And God provided a provision on the seventh day where they would be able to be given a break from working to feed their own belly. All right? So that was the provision, and God had high expectations for that particular event. And so we learn right from the introduction that God was trying to teach them to rely on him. Now, not only did they have to rely on the manna every day, but they had to rely on a special provision on the sixth day. They had to trust that the food would last to the seventh day. They had to trust because from their experiences, it was contrary to them. Their experiences, it goes bad really quick. You got to eat it and it's done. But he says on the seventh day, it'll be provided a miracle. And it also taught the difference between doing self-centered works and God-centered works. As each day of the week, you would self-centered, until the seventh day, you would do God-centered works because God would provide you what you needed. And the other little detail that should be captured is verse 29. It says, let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So we know that under Jewish traditions, that they had a lot of, I don't know what you call them. To me, they seem very silly, but they needed to reconcile the issues about the law saying don't go out of your house. So they had a lot of various rules. You could, you know, only, I haven't looked at all the various legal things, but you know, you could only open the door a certain way and you can only take so many steps and you can only be outside the house for so long. And there's all these rules they came up with to try to keep them within bounds of not going out of your place. So that was an expectation by God. Now, something that we might have forgotten is that the Ten Commandments bring out these particular details about the Sabbath and the necessity. Go to Exodus chapter 20. So here we have the Ten Commandments. And it begins, right? And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which hath brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of thy fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me, and keep my commandments. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. And here it is. You know, it begins these three commandments. It's all about God, right? How you worship God. And then there's this transition. There's this commandment, verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Now, as we're reading about the Sabbath, and we'll read the next commandments, look at the difference, how much emphasis is on the Sabbath compared to some of these other commandments that we would think definitely probably way higher on the value, right? Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. 6 days thou shalt labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservants, nor thy maidservants, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and the sea, and all that is in them. Rested the seventh day, wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Four verses to deal with the Sabbath. Look at this. Next. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. The first commandment with blessing. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservants, nor his maidservants, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. What a contrast when God puts so much focus first into knowing who God is and then this Sabbath day. And then, you know, almost flippantly, some of these other, you know, don't kill anyone, don't steal from anyone. And it's not to downplay those verses. It's just to say that God really wanted us to say something's important about the Sabbath. So we can appreciate the Jewish conundrum where they recognize the Sabbath was absolutely critical. God keeps reinforcing those that keep his commandments. Well, one of his Ten Commandments, keep the Sabbath. So they tried. They tried their best to keep the Sabbath in many, many ways. Now, Jesus Christ provides us this wonderful summary of the law in Mark chapter 12. And what's fascinating about Jesus' summary is that it wasn't just him who came to that conclusion. It was a very legalistic Jew, a Pharisee, that also agreed with him. So in Mark chapter 12, in verse 28, the scribe, I should say, and one of the scribes, so he was a lawyer, someone who really understood all these nitty-gritty details, and having heard them, reasoned together, and perceived that he had answered them well, asked him, which is the first commandment of all? So he's trying to say, what's the most important commandment? If you're willing to sum up the law, how would you do it so that we can keep it? And Jesus answered him, the first of all the commandments is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. So remember, the Ten Commandments are broken up. You have these first three commandments that are centered focusedly on God, his name, his position, his singularity. And then you had seven commandments that are to do with works, things that we should or shouldn't do. And there's this transition which begins with the Sabbath. So he sums up the whole law in that one commandment. And then he says the second part, which is related to the first, in other words, you can't keep the first if you don't keep the second. The second is like, namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There's none other commandments greater than these. And the scribe said unto him, well, master, thou hast said the truth. So he concluded that Christ had done a good summary of the law. There is one God, and there is none other but he. And to love him with all thy heart, with all thy understanding, with all thy soul, with all thy strength, and to love his neighbor as himself is more than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices. And when Jesus saw that, he answered discreetly, he said unto him, thou art not far from the kingdom of God. And what happened as a result of that? So they're all trying to corner him, and he gives such an amazing answer. Says, no man after durst ask him any questions. So if he could get out of that corner, which was all about what's the most important law to keep, like how do you keep those laws, how do you summarize those things, if he could get out of that corner and provide an answer that was eloquent and simple enough for them to accept it, I think we can also, as we go through this difficult subject of the Sabbath, we can come to the same conclusion of what God expects from us in keeping these commandments, specifically the Sabbath. Now, we read in the Ten Commandments that not one single person was to do work, and it was based on the principle established in creation. As God rested on the seventh day from his work, so are we to rest from our work. So God's saying, follow me, right? We know in Matthew it says, be perfect even as God is perfect. So God is saying, do as I do. I worked 6 days, put together everything, so that the seventh day there would be rest. So he's saying there's a pattern, there's an expectation. If he does it, then we should do it. If we go to Exodus chapter 31, we'll just see how important it really was. Now, we already know that God keeps on saying, you got to keep my commandments, and that's who he will reward. So keeping his commandments is hand in hand with being rewarded by God. And Exodus 31, verse 15, 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever doeth any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. So when we look at the law and we look at the regulations and what was worthy of death, what wasn't worthy of death, what type of restitution was expected in various situations of sin or shortcomings, here the Sabbath was pretty blunt. It was cut and dry. You don't keep the Sabbath, you get put to death. So that's a tough pill to swallow, especially if something came up on the Sabbath, right, the seventh day, and you had to do it. Well, you had a choice, die or do it. So you can see how critical in the Jewish mind it was. They had existed through a period of history where that was the expectation, that was the pressure. If you don't keep the Sabbath in that particular legalistic way, you're put to death. Now, we don't have any examples except under the law where the man picked up sticks. So we don't know how well they kept it throughout their history. But we know that it's definitely a force in Jewish mindset. So what are the lessons so far? Just from looking at the Old Testament and just a couple comments from Christ. First, we've reiterated just from these simple things. Stop doing our own works. Or specifically, works specific to providing for ourselves. So that was God's expectation. That's the principle behind the Sabbath. And it's clearly seen is we need to stop focusing on us. And the connection to is working on the Sabbath is sin. We know that the consequences of sin is death. And so God is saying, working on the Sabbath, which is working self-centered works, on the Sabbath is sin. And thus, the result is death. So he's making a connection to sin and working on the Sabbath. Now, something that you might not be aware of is that there was actually a Sabbath year. So not only every 7 days there was a Sabbath, but every 7 years there was a whole year of Sabbath. So let's look at that. Exodus chapter 23. Exodus 23, verse 11, we're told, "But on the seventh year thou shalt let it rest and lie still, that the poor of thy people may eat, and that they, and they leave the beasts of the fields shall eat. In like manner thou shalt deal with thy vineyard and with thy olive yard." And now go to Leviticus chapter 25. So this is dealing with the Sabbath year. So that was, God said, don't till your fields for that whole year. It was to be left fallow. In Leviticus chapter 25, verses 4. "But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. Thou shalt neither sow thy field nor prune thy vineyards." And in verse 20 of the same chapter, "And if ye shall say, what shall we eat the seventh year? Behold, we shall not sow nor gather in our increase." And he tells us in verse 21, "Then I will command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, that it shall bring forth fruit for 3 years." So God provided this event. Now, again, we don't know of any history that this particular miracle, again, occurs. But that was God's promise, that if every seventh year they left their fields fallow, so it was a Sabbath year, they didn't work on their fields, he said he would provide for them. Now, can you imagine? Well, we can see the purpose of the Sabbath. It was for the poor of the land to eat from them. So every 7 years, those that had nothing, they would get the increase, the natural increase of the land. And those that own those fields, God said he would bless them in the sixth year so that they would have 3 years of food. Now, how difficult would that be? To just leave your field. Like everything. Stop. Imagine, every 7 years you take a year off. And it's not, it's not like, oh, I got a vacation, right? It's a year off where you cannot work. That would be a tough break. I think all of us kind of inwardly think, oh, it'd be great. But if you consider being a farmer, and that's how you provide for your family, you really had to anticipate, what if that 6 year wasn't just enough food? What if it was a tough year? Right, you don't got 3 years of food. What do you do the seventh year? So it was a conundrum. Clearly, it couldn't be kept the same way as the seventh day, where you didn't even go out of your house. Imagine for a whole year you just stayed inside. Clearly, the Sabbath year was kept in a different way than the Sabbath day. And yet, it's the same principles, isn't it? Now, what are some of the other principles in the seventh year? Deuteronomy chapter 15. So we're always asking, why are these commandments? Why are these expectations? What is God trying to teach us through this? In a reading in Matthew chapter 12, Christ picks up on some of these things. Deuteronomy 15, verse 9. "Beware that there be not a thought in thy wicked heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of release, is at hand, and thine eye be evil against thy poor brother, and thou givest him naught, and he cry unto the Lord against thee, and it be sin unto thee." So what is this? What is this talking about? Well, the context is about a brother or someone, a neighbor, right, who needs a loan. So he needs something, money or provision of some sort. And you know, remember, if you loaned in under the law, you couldn't add usury. They did, but you weren't supposed to add usury. So if you say you lent him $10 just for, you know, an arbitrary amount, and you know the 10th year is coming up, so now he owes you $10. Well, when the seventh year comes up, you have to release him of the bondage. You have to say you're forgiven of your debt. Well, you know, it'd be a big difference if it's the beginning of the, you know, it's the first year, and you go, oh, he's got 6 years to pay it off, I'll get my money back. So a lot of people, they would have looked at the law and said, well, we've got to keep the Sabbath. My brother or neighbor needs some money, but I know there's no way he can pay me back in the year, or what's left of the year before the Sabbath. And so your eye is evil, and you say, I can't lend you the money. And God says, if you don't lend the money, it's evil, and it's sin. And we know that the result of sin is death. So there was an expectation under the Sabbath, the seventh year, of being released. And it also reiterates this particular thing in verse 12. And if thy brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, be sold unto thee and serve thee 6 years, then in the seventh year thou shalt let him go free from thee. So what a transition, where you have servants, and every 7 years, you got to let them all go. So your whole life was thrown in disarray in the way that I think, every 7 years. If you lent money, you wouldn't get it back if it came the seventh year. So you'd be getting really anxious as the years creep on, and you get close to the seventh year. And yet God had provided this particular structure so that those that were in need would be released from their bondages, from their chains, their difficulties, their trials in life. And those that had much, those in the 6 years that would glean, if they were faithful and God had provided, they would glean enough that the seventh year, all those poor, those servants that were free, they would go out in the fields, they would work those fields and take from those fields. And God provided every seventh year for these people that needed this release. So that was God's expectation for the Sabbath year. Do you think it was all that different for every week? Do you think he has, you know, totally similar patterns and plans, and they're totally different? So God's trying to teach us these greater principles about providing for those in need on the Sabbath. So the Sabbath constantly, it was a week by week, 7 years, 7 years, constant reminder. The children of Israel were to rely on their God rather than their own hands. It reminded the people that they must provide for others and to deliver others from their debts. Now, the Sabbath is, I would suggest, very largely misunderstood. And it's due to the legalistic approach to keep it. So many would expect the Sabbath be kept as it was instituted. There, however, are issues with this narrow interpretation, as it does not take into account many other details within Scripture. First of all, when was the Sabbath introduced? Well, it was when the children of Israel left Egypt and the law was given. Well, we've had a couple thousand years where the Sabbath hasn't been instituted, and yet it was based on the pattern of creation. So there's a conundrum, an issue. If it's so critical and absolute in our worship and fellowship with God, then how come it doesn't come into being to thousands of years after creation, after the introduction of God's pattern of 6 days of work and 1 day of rest? Surely something as important as the Sabbath would have been observed by all from the beginning of creation. And yet the only commandment Adam and Eve were asked to keep was not to eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So what a contrast here it was, you know, if you're creating the very laws and structures of religious worship, those things that made God happy, do you not think he would have said, Adam and Eve, every 7 days, I want you to take a rest, because that's what I did. So there's an issue if we do not consider the grand scope of God's plan and purpose. If we just, we focus on a legalistic approach to worship. Now consider what Christ brings into the picture, circumcision. While the commandment was not that no one was allowed to do work, the priest must, by the law, break the Sabbath. Now, go to John chapter 7. In verse 22, Moses therefore gave unto you circumcision, not because it is of Moses, but of your fathers, and ye on the Sabbath day circumcise a man. If a man on the Sabbath day receives circumcision, that the law of Moses should not be broken, are ye angry at me because I have made a man every whit whole on the Sabbath day? Judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. So there was this contradiction in the law. There was an expectation to do what was considered work, provide that service of circumcision on the eighth day of a child being born if it fell on the seventh. So there was an issue, and what it really highlights is that there was legitimate reasons for specific people to do work. Right? Sabbath said, do no work. And yet here we know that if a priest needed to, on the eighth day of the birth of a child, provide that service, he was expected to do it. And the family was supposed to go out of the house and go and get that done. So God provided this expectation that was contrary to a legalistic approach, not to the principles, but a legalistic approach to the Sabbath. Now go to Leviticus chapter 12, verse 3. And this is where it's picked up about this expectation on circumcision. So speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a woman have conceived seed and born a man-child, and she shall be unclean 7 days, according to the days of the separation for her infirmity shall she be unclean. And in the eighth day of the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. So that was the expectation of the law. And he doesn't say, well, if it fell on the Sabbath, then you do it the next day. There were some other things, like if they couldn't keep a feast because they weren't clean, they were expected to keep it the next week. And God doesn't provide that provision in this case. So circumcision was deemed greater than the Sabbath, though circumcision is not mentioned in the Ten Commandments. Right? There's no commandment that says circumcision is expectation. And we know, especially in the New Testament, really highlights this. It tells us, you know, when was he accounted righteous, before or after circumcision? It was before, right? So that principle, circumcision, was greater than the Sabbath. It was an expectation. It's not a contradiction. It's merely showing us the Sabbath is not simply to be observed in a static, simplistic, continuous way. That's what it's highlighting. It's saying there's things that are greater than keeping the Sabbath in a particular format. And we see that lesson in our reading in Matthew chapter 12. Now, if we go to 1 Peter chapter 2, we'll see this idea of this expectation of priest. This preeminence of role. So, 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. Who are we called to be? But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praise of him who hath called you out of darkness into marvelous light. And we do believe that God has shed upon us his marvelous light in his Son. He's called us out of this world of darkness, and he's provided us a way, a means of redemption or of salvation from our sins. So we've been called out to be priests. So there's specific work that God would have us to do on the Sabbath. Well, we know circumcision is one of those things. Circumcision was something a priest should do. And what is circumcision? It's the cutting off of the flesh, isn't it? And I hope we're all catching those lessons. So there's an expectation to cut off the flesh on the Sabbath day. Now, we also know in 2 Corinthians, this expectation that the law was not to continue forever. Now, to a Jewish mind, the New Testament doesn't play a strong role. But I think that the reasoning and rationale that we've been processing, we'll see actually it's picked up in the New Testament, 2 Corinthians chapter 3. And verse 6 to 9. Who also hath made us able ministers of the New Testament, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter killeth, but the Spirit giveth life. But if the ministration of death, now what is he saying that? That is a phrase, I could say, but if the law, written and engraved in stones, right? And we've just read the Ten Commandments, they were made in stones. The ministration of death. And it was glorious, so that the children of Israel could not steadfastly behold the face of Moses for the glory of his countenance, which glory was to be what? Done away. How shall not the ministration of the Spirit be rather glorious? For if the ministration of condemnation, of death, be glory, much more doth the ministration of righteousness exceed in glory. So he's saying, these commandments that were written in stone were condemnation to death. In other words, if you read the Ten Commandments, the conclusion you should come to is, I can't keep them. I can't keep them. Now, we know in a legalistic approach, we can say, check that off, check that off, check that off, check that off. And we know this one of the scribes did that, right? And Christ said, you're not far from the kingdom. Sell all that you have and follow me. And he went away sorrowful. So there was this expectation, wasn't it? And Christ, he brings out the law. He says, you know, thou shalt not kill. And he says, I say unto you, if you hate your brother, you're a murderer. He says, thou shalt not commit adultery. But if you lust after women, you've committed adultery. So he brings these lessons, these outward works of the law. He says they have to come into our heart. They have to make an impression upon the way that we think. It can't just be outward actions. They have to be inward thoughts that result in outward actions. And so this ministration of death, this condemnation that said, if you work on the Sabbath, and I can guarantee you, every Jewish person on this earth from the beginning to today has had to do some work on the Sabbath. They might disagree with me vehemently, but they have all had to do something that would be contrary to even a legalistic approach following Scripture on the Sabbath day. So they'd be in a bind, wouldn't they? Now, we know they had to break it for circumcision, and there was other reasons as well. Remember, even Christ, he challenged them, if you have not a sheep that's in a hole, would you not go get it? And of course, they couldn't say, no, we wouldn't. Of course they would. So they were in a situation where they would break the Sabbath, but the condemnation of breaking the Sabbath was death, because it was considered sin. Now, Colossians also teaches us this lesson of what the law really was. Colossians chapter 2, verses 16 to 17. So the law and the keeping of these things, it was bondage. And there was nothing wrong in keeping them legally. If you wish to keep the Sabbath in a legalistic approach and keep it on Saturday, there's nothing wrong in that. It says in verse 16, let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink or in respect of a holy day or of a new moon or on of the Sabbath day. Why? Because they are a shadow of things to come, but the body is of Christ. So he's saying, especially in this context, new century, the first century, I should say, the establishment of the ecclesia, they all began in synagogues. Our exhortation this morning highlighted this, three Sabbath days. It began with a Jewish faith, and they understood the law, and they were able to make these connections. And so many of the Jewish minds, they had a lot of difficulties accepting the Gentiles into the faith, but they would have wanted to keep the Sabbath as instituted. And Paul says, that's fine. You can keep the Sabbath. You can keep these holy days as per instituted. But there's something greater, because these are ministrations of death, the ministration of righteousness through faith, by reading of the word, or by intaking the word, is far greater. And he shows that principle, of course, with Abraham. Now, so we've really, I think, hammered this fact that there are things that are greater than the Sabbath. And there was expectation for specific activities to occur on the Sabbath, even though they were contrary to a legalistic approach. Now, we know the ministration of Christ. Go back to Mark chapter 1. So, considering Christ's life, and we'll just look really quickly at a handful of these, but this is something reiterated over and over again through the ministration of Christ. In verse 21, Mark chapter 1, and they went into Capernaum, and straightway on the Sabbath day he entered in the synagogue, and he taught. Now go to chapter 2, verses 21 to 28. We don't want to read it all, but and we'll read just the last couple of verses there, 27. The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord also the Sabbath. So, once again, there's this event, and he's dealing, we deal with it in Mark, we'll get Matthew, we'll go back to there in a few more minutes, where he's saying there's something greater than the Sabbath. And the folk of the Sabbath is what? Is it for man, or is man for the Sabbath? That's the question he puts. Chapter 3, verses 2. And they watched him whether he would heal them or heal him on the Sabbath day that they might accuse him. So you notice this reiteration in chapter 6 and verse 2. And when the Sabbath day was come, he began to teach in the synagogue. And in chapter 15 and verse 42. And now when the even was come, because it was the preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath. And in chapter 16, verse 1, and when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene. So the Sabbath plays a really important role upon Christ's ministration from beginning to end. And he made an effort in every possible way, and I'm going to say this in a probably inappropriate way, to insult the Jewish conscience of a legalistic approach to the Sabbath. Even the Jews said, you have 6 days to heal a man. Do it then. And he does it on the seventh day. And it's not to say Christ probably healed people all through the week. But specifically, we see that he really puts them to the task. He heals people right in front of their eyes and challenges what? Their perception and their keeping of the law in a legalistic, simplistic way. So he challenges them constantly over doing these, what, works. He does works, 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 works on the Sabbath day. Did he keep the Sabbath? Now, Luke chapter 13. This is the question I put before you. What if God was like this ruler in Luke chapter 13? Remember, God set the principle of the Sabbath based on his own work and what he does. In Luke chapter 13, verse 14. And the ruler of the synagogue, here it is, answered with indignation because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath day and said unto the people, there are 6 days in which man ought to work, and then therefore come and be healed, and not on the Sabbath day. So, and I believe in every way possible that the ruler of the synagogue is a very religious individual. He's somebody who believed you should keep the commandments, that you should faithfully serve God. And his conclusion was, you have 6 days to do this. Do it then. Imagine if, remember, we're doing this because God has done this. Imagine God said, today's not the day, I can't help you. You know, come back tomorrow. What if God had taken that approach? What if that was the principle of the Sabbath? Is that one day out of the week, I'm on hiatus. Can't help you. You're out of luck. You're on your own. I gave you enough the first 6 days. You're good to go. What if that was God's approach? That was the ruler of the synagogue's approach. 6 days you can get help, but not the seventh. So clearly, it provides a conundrum for the Jewish mind to keep the spirit of the Sabbath and also legally keep the Sabbath in the simplistic interpretation, right? Because it was for what? Releasing people from their bondages, from their debts, from their situations in life, the poor, the feeble, the weak. That was the purpose of the Sabbath. So why did Christ do so much work on the Sabbath? It was pointing forward to the work he would do in the millennial year. And we know that there's this pattern of 6,000 years of God working, working, working. And the 7,000th year, he's this plan of this millennial year of the kingdom. When it's set up and there's this release of the land and the people from their bondage. Now return to Matthew chapter 12. So we're back to our reading. And it's something you might not have been aware. But the disciples, we're told, began to pluck the ears of corn and to eat it. Now that was against the rules. And we can see that. They call him on it. That was against the rules, legalistically speaking, even in the reading from the scriptures, not adding tradition. Is you weren't supposed to gather food on the Sabbath day to fill your own belly. You're supposed to provide it on the sixth day. And so the disciples were breaking the law, legalistically approaching it. And so they're called out on it. Now, I also note, and this is something neat about Christ, you notice he's not doing it. All right? Now, it's a discussion for another class or whatnot, is why Christ doesn't do it. But Christ is not doing it. His disciples are doing it. So the disciples are breaking the law. And you would think, well, if they're breaking the law and they're not keeping the commandments, that's not good, and they should stop. Why would Christ, an individual who is righteous and someone who is upholding the law himself, why wouldn't he tell them to stop? Why instead does he condemn those that challenge the disciples in this? Now, Christ's defense is incredibly interesting. First, we read verse 3 to 4. He says, "But he said unto them, Have you not read what David did when he was hungered, and they that were with him? How he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priest." So he brings out this situation in which no legal mind could answer. There is not a possible way you can legally wrap your head around David eating the showbread and being allowed to. You can say he broke the law, you can say he did all these other things, but you can't say it was okay, legally speaking. And so they couldn't, there was no answer for that. They couldn't answer that because, legally speaking, that was not allowed. And yet, the high priest, Ahimelech, says, what were the conditions? The conditions were, if the men with David and his men, what was to be holy? Right? If they had separated themselves from women for a period of time, that was an expression of holiness. In other words, they weren't, you know, just living day-to-day lives. In fact, we know they weren't. They were in a field for days, and they were on the run for their lives. And so that was the expectation, that they were holy, and then they could eat the showbread. And then he says, in verse 6-8, that there was something greater at the temple, and he's speaking of himself. There was something greater. And now we already know the principle of circumcision. Circumcision is greater than the Sabbath. So those things that were greater than the Sabbath you could perform those duties. They must have precedence over the Sabbath. And so then the conclusion is in verse 10 to 13, a withered hand, he challenges him, he says, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day?" Remember, that's a work. And of course, they're silent. And he puts out his hand and Christ heals him. So Christ is showing that the purpose of the Sabbath was not in the keeping of it, but rather in the keeping of the understanding of it. Isn't that the whole point of Christ's ministration? He's saying keeping the Ten Commandments is a ministration of death, but keeping the Spirit, in other words, not lusting after things you shouldn't lust after, coveting things you shouldn't covet, those expressions that come within, if we can keep those at bay, then we're keeping the Ten Commandments. It's this outward show that in of itself is empty and vain. It's dead bones. It's graves, right? That's the condemnation of Christ to the Pharisees, Sadducees, and scribes. In legally keeping it, the people were actually disobeying it. God had established it for a day of release, not bondage. So there was an expectation to change what you were doing every seventh day. But it wasn't about not doing anything. And so the Jewish mind, legally trying to keep the Sabbath in the way that they had done it, they'd actually bound themselves with even larger fetters than that which God was trying to teach them about. So just as the other laws were to be internalized rather than just kept outward action, so the Sabbath, instead of working unto ourselves, filling our own bellies, we need to set apart time to tend to others, to heal the brokenhearted, to bind their wounds. Go to Romans chapter 14. And this is our last passage we're going to look at. Reiterating a comment that I made earlier with the acceptation that people can keep the Sabbath. there's still an expectation that we all keep the Sabbath, but we're supposed to keep the Sabbath by the Spirit. In other words, providing for others. And it says in Romans chapter 14, verses 5 to 6, one man esteemeth one day above another. Another esteemeth every day alike. Let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. He that regardeth the day regardeth it to whom? Unto the Lord. And he that regardeth not the day, to the Lord he doth not regard it. He that eateth, to the Lord, for he giveth God thanks. And he that eateth not, in other words, somebody who would fast, to the Lord he eateth not and giveth God thanks. So God is trying to teach us that each day we need to rely on him. And each day give God thanks for provisions that he has given us. And each day provide opportunity to help those in need, those in debt. And if we choose one day of the week, and we say we're going to focus on that day, that's going to be our special day of service, God says, regard that everybody in their own mind. If you think that you should be focusing more than one day, he says, all the power to you. That's wonderful, as long as you're keeping the spirit of the law. So, if Christ did not condemn his disciples for breaking the Sabbath, but rather defended them from those who would legally enforce it, then what? We must do the same. We must also defend those that aren't doing anything wrong on the Sabbath from those that would challenge them because of a legalistic approach to keeping the Sabbath. We should be like Christ, keeping the spirit of the law and doing God's work instead of our own. But not just one day of the week or every seventh year for a year, but each day that we have. Our focus should always be providing deliverance, providing help and assistance for any. We should not be like the ruler of the synagogue who, religious in every possible way, failed in the most basic concept, is to visit the fatherless, to provide for those in need. And so, let's not just do our work 7 days of the week. Let's not just pretend that we should be falling head over heel, just trying to follow God in some religious kind of legalistic approach. Instead, it should be we need to do work, and we also need to serve God. And if we break up those parts in our lives, as in we know they both need to be there, and we focus on those, then we'll keep the Sabbath. We'll keep it day by day, and we won't be breaking it, because we know that in breaking the Sabbath, God says, he shall surely be put to death. So here we have a whole room of Bible students. I think that after reviewing the scriptures, we can all be convinced in our own mind what we must do every week to serve our God.